I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show. Powered by Sports Interaction, Canada's Sportsbook.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
What a last few days for milestones and point streaks over the last little while, Siege. Between Mitch Marner, Jason Robertson keeping it going, Steven Stamkos has hit the 1,000-point plateau. A lot to celebrate over the last few days in the National Hockey League.
It really has. And you know what? It's sort of fitting because it reminds me of the way the NHL was when I was a kid. You had a lot of basically Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Brett Hull, even Teemu Selänne when he entered the league with his crazy rookie season, McGillney. Like you had a lot of offensive stars put up sort of video game numbers. And it's only fitting because when you look at it, NHL scoring is actually up over last year to this point. I mean, we really are getting back to an era of offense that we've only seen a few times in NHL history. It's not quite the 80s yet in terms of goals per game and things like that. But, you know, I do think that this is good for hockey. I think it's pretty exciting, especially for kids. I'm not saying I'm not excited, but, you know, I kind of remember that time and how cool it was to see these guys chasing down the records. And I got to think if you're a younger fan of the Dallas Stars or the Maple Leafs with Marner and Robertson, that it's pretty cool every game watching them, knowing that they have to get a point. Like you're just watching that game, you're watching that player to see if he does it. And they've both been on quite a run, and they actually play each other on Tuesday. So the two streaks come together on Tuesday night in Dallas.
That's going to be really sick. So for those somehow not in the know, Mitch Marner point streak gets extended to 19 games. That sets a franchise record that was once held by Daryl Sittler. And then Jason Robertson's point streak going to 18 games, just further extending the heater that he happens to be on and helping his Hart Trophy candidacy tenfold, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and you know, we need perspective here, though, because it like this is a great moment to highlight. They would each have to go for another 2 months to threaten the NHL record for Wayne Gretzky at 51. And I know we talked a little bit about Gretzky's point streak in the last show, but like that's actually important context here. Like, not taking anything away from them. Don't get me wrong. This is we're getting into pretty elite territory when you look at active players. You haven't seen many recent players get anywhere beyond the mid-20s. So they're sort of creeping up on those kind of marks. And obviously, if you're setting a mark for a team as old as the Leafs, as Marner has, you know, a lot of different players have worn that sweater and not come close to this kind of excellence. But, you know, it also just shows you how much of a mountain remains if they're ever to thread it. I think it'd be cool if one of them could do it or both. I mean, it would I'm not sort of cheering for it, but I think it would be really neat if someone got into the 30s or even the 40s, because I think by then you're really creating a lot of interest in each game.
Forgive me for the podcast crossover for 1 second, because on the Athletic Hockey Show with Ian Mendez, which I do every Monday, I learned something very interesting with Wayne Gretzky's statistics with regards to fantasy hockey. And maybe you could tell me if this is true. Apparently, once upon a time, because of how good Wayne Gretzky would be, when it came time for like drafting players with Wayne Gretzky, you would be able to, like, it wouldn't be fair to just draft Wayne Gretzky, the player, because he was that much of a cheat code. Like, you would have to draft his goals and his assists separately. Have you ever heard of this?
Yeah, I wasn't playing fantasy hockey then, but I've heard of that. I've also heard of pools where it was just the whole league minus Wayne Gretzky. Like you couldn't access him. I mean, you look back, like he had a 212 point season, and I don't have that in front of me, but I think he was like 50 or 60 points ahead of the next guy in the league. I mean, there wouldn't be much point in contesting a fantasy hockey league if one player had 60 more points than the next best player. You know, we don't even still have that today. I mean, as great as Connor McDavid is, and he's clearly the best point producer in the game, no question. You know, he's still only got a couple points up on Robertson, and Draisaitl tends to stay pretty close to him. So, you know, you don't see him winning the scoring title by 50. I mean, maybe he'll do it 1 year. I'll be the last one to say he can't do something. But, yeah, that was how crazy Gretzky was. And honestly, Lemieux, everything was sort of polarized. Again, if you grew up as a kid in like the 80s, early 90s, you kind of had to be one or the other. And obviously, neither, I mean, both were Canadian. Neither played for teams close to where I lived. So like you didn't have to have, like, I had no rooting interest, but I was always a Gretzky guy for whatever reason. But as I've looked back on it and thought about it as an adult, like there's a case that Lemieux at his peak was better than Gretzky at his peak, potentially. I mean, his career just has so many difficulties in it. A 3-year retirement, he missed time to get radiation treatment when he had cancer, he had various back injuries. But he'd come and play half a season and win a scoring title. Like it was kind of a crazy period. Anyway, I mean, I think we're in that similar renaissance, honestly. Like we might not have the exact same scenario recreated. It's not just about two guys, maybe quite as much. But you know, this is a special time, I think. And I think it's really good for the NHL. I mean, I just have to believe that this is the best. This is a better sales pitch, in my opinion, for the league than a whole bunch of brawls and things like that. It's not to say that I don't get excited for a goalie fight or something when it happens once a year, but like, I just think this is a way better way to market the league. And I think it's cool for kids to see, you know, the offensive stars be the main talking points.
Couldn't agree with you more there. I think that, funny enough, I had seen on my Instagram, there had been like a goalie fight somewhere in the OHL, but like, that's not going to get me nearly as hyped as like a fake Michigan, like what happened in the NCAA in women's hockey between Penn State and Syracuse, which hurt me as a Syracuse person. But also, like, stuff like that is cool.
Right. And like, you know, we talked about Mitch Marner. He was down to 2 minutes left in the one game and he gets the empty netter. But if you were watching that, it's pretty compelling. And even when he extended it to 19 in Tampa on Saturday, it was a shorthanded goal, kind of a goal out of nowhere that Mitch created. I mean, it's Jason Robertson's been crazy. I mean, he's more than a goal per game during his 18 game point streak. So this is what the game should be about. And I don't know what's going to happen next. Like not just with these two players. Like it just feels like we're not even at the limit yet. Like maybe we're going to keep seeing more and more offense. You know, it seems like that's the way things are trending right now. You know, it's pretty exciting. Some record, lot more records that were never in play are all of a sudden coming back into play again.
Is there a NHL record through the history books that you like, if I were to ask you that question, like, you'd be like, yo, this is it. Like, I love this stat. Like, this is it. This is the record that I really think is cool. And you can't say like, oh, Wayne Gretzky scored the most goals or whatever, like something cool and unique.
I mean, there's a lot we could choose from. I was also a kid when Gretzky actually was first chasing down Gordie Howe's all-time points record. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty exciting at the time. Like every game there was anticipation. Gordie Howe was actually traveling from game to game so that he could be there when Gretzky did it. He actually set the record against the Edmonton Oilers because he had moved on to the LA. I believe he did it in Edmonton. Like it was quite poetic the way it all happened. Probably because I've had these point streaks in my head lately, those are two cool ones. I mean, Gretzky's 51 points in games in a row with a point is nuts. But Lemieux had a year, 89-90, I had to look this up. He ended up at 46 game point streak. And that happened to coincide with the very first NHL game I attended at Maple Leaf Gardens, obviously just as a kid with my dad. And the Leafs stunk back then. I mean, they stunk for a long, long time. And so as a kid, like you just, and you know, the Penguins were on their rise. This was a year before they won their first of the back-to-back cups. And Lemieux was just like superhuman. And the Leafs actually, he was into the early 40s in that game. I looked up February 3rd, 1990. And he'd been held off the score sheet for two periods. And I just remember as a kid, I was like, oh my God, like the Leafs could actually be the team that stops him. Like, you know, like the crappy Leafs. And then Lemieux scored in the first minute of the third period to keep it going. But he still was minus four on the night. I'm looking at the stats. The Leafs won 8-4. And, you know, a pretty memorable night of my childhood. I don't know about you, Julian. I went to three NHL games as a kid, like before I worked in the business.
Really?
So I could, you know, I didn't, it wasn't an opportunity. I had a lot. Obviously, I was a hockey mad kid. I wanted to do this job. So I could tell you in detail about each of those three games. Like I still remember the details, who scored, what happened. You know, it was pretty, those are pretty big moments in my childhood. And one of them coincided with that Lemieux streak. And so Lemieux had some crazy stretches. My boss, actually, Mike Cormack at North Star Bets, he was a big Lemieux guy as a kid. And he told me this one. He said, when Mary came back from radiation treatment, which is pretty crazy when you think about it, he had a 16-game point streak that started. He had 27 goals and 51 points in 16 games after receiving treatment for cancer. So this is what I mean. Like, those guys were crazy. And so some of those streaks, you know, anything that blends with your childhood, I think it's so I'm not just saying this is the most impressive thing ever, but it's just like it has a certain touch point for you. And so I think of that stuff. And that's why I'm hoping, honestly, that these streaks keep going or someone else puts one together. Because I know Kirill Kaprizov is not too far behind. He's got the longest stretch, I think, now in Minnesota Wild history going. It'd be cool if somebody could get into the 30s or 40s. I think every game then would become this event that everyone's focused on.
Absolutely, man. Wow, well said. Also, the fact that you've only been to – that you had gone to three games before you were working in the industry. I used to feel weird at the fact that, like, I think I had only gone to maybe two before I started working, and it only had been – in the last like few years. Like, I don't have anywhere like I went as like a little like 8 or 9 year old kid. Like, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, tickets were expensive for Leaf games, you know, I probably forever, but definitely in the early 90s when I was a kid, and still to this day. And you know, I didn't come from a family that had a ton of disposable income for stuff like that, and it just, there also wasn't opportunities. Like, You almost didn't know how to get tickets. We weren't going to go down and probably buy off a scalper in front of the building. It was, this is pre-StubHub days for those that are a little younger that might be watching or listening. It was hard, but you know, I remember every game. Like, that's actually the cool part. And obviously I've been very, 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 very fortunate because I've been to more than 1,000 since then, I would think.
Last thing before we do sports interaction, because I did mention Steven Stamkos and the fact that he reached the 1,000 point mark. Any thoughts on him and obviously his career and the fact that the future Hall of Famer that he is was able to reach that mark?
Well, this is how I view it, right? If you went back 15 years to when he was the big prospect and you said he's going to have a 1,000 point career, everyone would be like, of course. But if you actually have followed him throughout the 15 years as I have in a professional capacity, like, I think of all the struggles he's had and all the times he wasn't able to play. You know, whether it was breaking his leg and missing the 2014 Olympics, I covered the 2016 playoffs where he was dealing with blood clot issues. He couldn't play at all. He came back for game 7 of the Eastern Conference final in Pittsburgh and his team lost that night. So he came back to try to have a chance to go to the Stanley Cup. And then of course the 2020 bubble, when he was only able to play 5 shifts the entire playoffs, but he scored a goal in the cup final on one of them. Pretty legendary stuff. And so it's pretty cool to see him on this side of it for me, Julian. You know, he had his first ever 100-point season last year. He's scoring at a similar rate right now. He's in the top 20 in league scoring as we're talking now. And so the fact he's still such a relevant player and putting up big numbers and reaching these milestones is great, because there was definitely a period early in his career where it just looked like he might be too injured or have too many problems that he could never get to these marks. But now I'm almost thinking, like, how high can he go? I mean, we know aging curves are what they are, but he's 32. I mean, Joe Pavelski's still pretty productive at 38, 39 in the league. So maybe Steven Stamkos has got another window here where he's going to chase down 12 or 13 or 1400 points. I mean, you know, it's been a great career, and, you know, just a reminder, it's not a straight line for anybody, even the best of the best. The number one overall pick, who's kind of getting where you thought he would get, he dealt with a lot of crap in between there and now, and he's really had to persevere to hit these marks.
Well said, and congratulations to Steven Stamkos on reaching 1,000 NHL points. We're going to do our You Can Bet That segment for Sports Interaction. As always, it's for those 19 and over. We ask that you play responsibly, and there will be a link to responsible gaming strategies in the description of the show. It's time for You Can Bet That. Vancouver Canucks are the next team I want to discuss, CJ. Because pretty much since training camp, something comes up with this team off the ice, on the ice. And the latest story that, or I guess there's kind of two things that have kind of come out from this past weekend, and they both surround Brock Besser. Brock Besser, a guy in the first year of a 3-year deal with an AAV, 6.65 mil. Looks as if he's going to be a healthy scratch on Saturday. At the very last second, gets plugged into the game. It just so happens that it's Hockey Fights Cancer Night. In his personal life, he lost his father to that horrible disease. It's a game that meant a lot to him, and he almost was not going to play that game. So it looked as, and as Bruce Boudreau, his head coach, had said, it looked as if he was playing mad. It also just so happens that Brock Besser, according to Elliot Friedman, would be available for trade. That's also announced the same night. What do you make of the Brock Besser affair, the latest story surrounding the wildest soap opera going right now, the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, there's a couple things. I mean, it's funny. You focus on any one team, like hyper-focus on them. Throughout a year, there's going to be ups and downs, right? I mean, even the teams that finish at the top of the standings, there'll be periods of indifferent play or injuries or something that makes you just doubt where they're headed. Where I'm looking for in Vancouver, there's been no up, right? Like it feels like it's been down right out of the gate. They had that long road trip and losing streak right from the beginning, blowing the multi-goal leads. You know, all the drama with Bruce Boudreau and Jim Rutherford and, you know, some public comments. I know they've won games in the meantime, but, you know, they're still endured a couple difficult losses here. And now this. So it's been a ride, and it's been several years of this, quite frankly, if we zoom out a little bit more than just this season. And I think that where that context is important is that it leads you to a moment like this where you have a player like Brock Besser, who's 25 years old, whose development or production seems to have stagnated. And there's just a lot of built up frustration there. And you know, I think where we're at, and it's a great scoop from Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada, is that both the Canucks and Brock Besser and his agents all agree that it's probably best for there to be a fresh start here. And, you know, we'll see how that materializes. You know, his agent does have the ability to speak to other teams, which is a tactic or a strategy that sometimes GMs will deploy in this circumstance, because, you know, it might help them find the right fit. And then maybe the teams can swoop in and figure out what, you know, how to make the trade work after that point in time. But, you know, it does seem as though his time is limited. And I think that there's an understanding too, though, he's still a pretty young player. Right. And, you know, I think the Canucks understand he'll probably move on and score a bunch of goals for someone else in a better situation, but it's just not a very good situation for a lot of reasons right now in Vancouver. And, you know, I think management there has been looking to make some changes since they got there and had some trouble doing so. And, you know, perhaps this will be the first shoe to drop. I would certainly not expect it to be the last from what we might call established pieces that have been part of this franchise for some time. And, you know, I'm not sure how long it's going to take for that trade to come together, because as we know, we haven't seen too many impactful trades, and we're talking, you know, pretty big cap hit here, changing hands. But, you know, the beauty of it for anyone who steps up and makes that deal is that you're not trading for a rental player. This isn't a typical kind of deal. This is a unique opportunity because the Canucks haven't won enough, and you know, Brock Besser hasn't had enough success for them to keep their marriage going long term.
Yeah, like this is a guy who could fit on so many other teams' top six. Like, you just have to find a way to make the money work. Maybe you ask the Canucks for salary retention, because like, I can understand teams at looking at a 6.65 mil salary, you're going to have to ask some questions. But just the fact that they're at this point with Brock Besser is just, I mean, I don't know. It just seems very, if I was a Canucks fan, I'd just be super frustrated.
Right. And look, when you get to this stage, like a lot of things have gone wrong. There's probably a little bit of blame on both sides for things that have happened. I mean, it's just a fact of the circumstances. But I mean, ultimately, this is the outcome when you have an organization that hasn't been run well, I think, because it's not like this is just one player, one specific set of circumstances. I mean, the Canucks have, you know, it's been a tire fire going back years. Again, I'm not talking just this first 2 months of this season. I think that there's sort of been a repetitive dive bomb towards chaos there for the Canucks. And I think that's why so many fans, you know, I hate to beat a dead horse here, but like they want the rebuild. They want a scorched earth kind of approach, because it almost feels like you have to burn everything down and start fresh. And, you know, I'm not sure they're going to do that. But, you know, it's unfortunate. And that team just doesn't want enough games. And, you know, Brock Besser, it's not that long ago, he was supposed to be part of the next wave, right? And really was treated as part of the next wave, signed to decent deals. I know there was, you know, a little bit of negotiations that had to go on there, but, you know, he's also had some injury trouble and things that have limited his ability to produce, to score as much as he did earlier in his career. And, you know, they just haven't advanced as a program. And so you got two people looking at each other going like, I don't see the way forward here. And the way forward, quite honestly, is probably going to be with Brock Besser playing in another team sweater.
So we've talked a little bit about the fact that he's available for trade. What do you think about the fact that the Canucks were going to scratch Brock Besser on a night that obviously holds personal sentiment to him?
Did the coaching staff even know about Hockey Fights Cancer Night? Or
that's a good question. I don't know how clear that is, that if they knew or not. I just kind of assume that like it's written up on a calendar and teams kind of know. But that is also a fair question. This too, I can't answer that question if they knew.
My best impression is that if they knew that, they wouldn't have scratched them that night. Like I don't like that. To me, the two things are unrelated in a sense. But I think if anyone had a, you know, like when you're in the heat with a team, like you don't even know what day it is, right? Like it's just like, is it a game day or a practice day or a travel day or whatever? Like. This is not to make excuses for anyone, but I think the fact of the matter is you don't see the big picture too often when you're, especially when you're a coach or a player and you're in the battle every day. And so my best guess is that that just was someone not putting two and two together. But I would like to think that had they realized that, they'd be like, okay, this probably isn't the night to make the point to the player that he's got to play better.
Very well said there. By the way, we went through all the Brock Besser stuff. I didn't even mention anything about Thatcher Demko being out for the next 6 weeks with a lower body injury. What the hell are the Canucks going to do there?
I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, look, it's there. I don't think they're making the playoffs. So, you know, it's not mathematically impossible. There is lots of runway left. But, I think we're starting. Like Thatcher Demko just didn't play very well this year. He said that himself. I think he had seen some uptick in performance after a tough start. That's part of the problems is I think he papered over some of their issues last season when he was quite good. It's just another blow, but I don't know that it's a case where they have to make some move to be better in the short term. I think whether they probably haven't got there entirely internally yet, but you know, at some point, the white flag is going to have to go up on the season. You know, we'll deal with the Bo Horvat situation at that time, I would think, because he's a pending unrestricted free agent. I know that there's still some desire to try to sign him versus trading him. But, you know, that'll play itself out here in the next 2 months as we get closer to the trade deadline. I just don't know that this team has enough right now to keep winning with the blue line in the nature it is, you know, being down at, you know, pretty good goaltender who hadn't played that well this year. And then, some of the other drama around the team, it's just not, I don't see the circumstances there for them to magically rally it together and win a bunch of games and make the rest of the season interesting, but stranger things have happened. Remember, it was around this time last year. I think it might've been almost this exact day that they fired Travis Green and Jim Benning and brought in Bruce Boudreau and Bruce, there it is, was born. And they had a pretty good run and they did get within breathing distance of the playoffs. So, I mean, it's not totally lost, but it's just hard to search for where do you find hope here? And I don't see them going to make a big trade for a goalie or something like that. I just think they're going to have to try to weather the storm with Spencer Martin and get through with what they've got.
Shout out to everyone who hosts Game Over Vancouver. Tough season for y'all, friends. Tough season for y'all.
Sometimes when there's chaos, yeah, right, though, those shows.
Oh, like, yeah.
Like it can be hard covering like a team that's predictably good or predict like chaos can be good for business. Let's be honest.
That's true. And if there's one market that does thrive off that, the Vancouver Canucks definitely take advantage of that. I do want to stick with goalies for a second because I want to go from Vancouver to St. Louis. And frankly, this guy we're about to talk about. I know you try to avoid the cross checks portion of the steak taps and cross checks. Sorry, I'm just going to say this dude deserves a lot of these cross checks that we would give out on the show. Jordan Binnington, the latest edition of him throwing a tantrum after not having a good game happened a couple nights ago against the Pittsburgh Penguins. He trips up Jason Zucker, gets pulled, obviously. tries to do the tough guy thing. And unless it has happened before, it's the first time I've heard Craig Berube go out of his way to be like, you know, dude, enough is enough. The quote that has gone around on social media has got to stop. It doesn't help anything. Just play goal. Stop the puck. What did you think about that?
Well, I'm not sure Jordan Binnington can help himself, right? I mean, there's a pretty well-established pattern of behavior here, which it's not like, I think we could all understand in a given moment, someone might act a little out of character and be frustrated or angry about something and lose their minds, and you view it as such. You know, I'll take, for example, last season when Austin Matthews cross-checked Rasmus Dahlin up near the neck area, was trying to get a shoulder pad, got a 2-game suspension. If you look at his career, 6-7 years in the league, he'd taken like 40 penalties. Like it was a moment where he lost his cool, but it's not like this is his rep. Jordan Binnington's got a reputation and it's well-earned now. And, you know, I would say that his coach is probably, you know, he's doing him a favor. I mean, I guess you'd like to handle this stuff behind the scenes. I'm sure they've tried to do that before now. And this is the tact, because at some point this, you know, you're going to have other players going out of their way, perhaps to go after him. I mean, it becomes a little bit of a distraction. And so, you know, stay tuned. But it's really weird. I can't think of many times over the years, like a goalie is one of the more kind of like agitator slash like the guy you hate on the other team players in the league, right? Usually doesn't work that way, right? It's someone like Brad Marchand over the years, or, you know, Darcy Tucker back in the day, you know, some of these players, Chris Neal, what have you, like that played a certain way that it always frustrated you if they were an opponent of your team. Can't think of a goalie that was like that. Maybe Ron Hextall might be the closest. He was pretty wild with his stick back in the before times when I was a young kid, but I can't think of anyone like this. So, I mean, I find it kind of compelling, and I do think it's going to hit a boil here. You're getting there where other players are saying stuff. His own coach is saying it. You know, someone might take matters into their own hands.
I mean, dude threw a water ball at Nazem Kadri in the playoffs. Like, I remember the game. Earl's nuts.
Well, think of all the times he's been like leaving the ice and like chirping the other team. And he's like a heel. Like, he's like a heel in wrestling or something. He's personally, it doesn't get my blood boiling, but I can understand why if you got to go up against him and you take, you know, the play like Zucker, like that's just sneaky dirty. I would understand why he'd be upset about that and his teammates. And so, as I say, I just think if he doesn't stop, then someone's, you know, going to go after him.
In terms of goalies with temper tantrums, there's two that immediately popped into my head. Ray Emery, when he was with the Ottawa Senators, I mean, he got himself into some fights.
Was legit tough, though.
He was legit tough. Absolutely.
Ray was like a tough guy who wore goalie gear.
Yeah, like dude was scrapping with Martin Biron and Andrew Peters in that one game. That's like a moment that stays in my mind forever.
Right, but like you could actually trust Ray to fight. Like, I think sometimes there's a thought that, you know, like I don't know if Jordan Binnington's tough, but you know, he's not a big guy really by professional athlete standards, and he's got a blocker and like he's got some pretty heavy, you know, those sticks are heavy if you want to hit someone with a stick. He's got more weapons at his disposal than a skater does.
The other goalie I was thinking of, it's one incident where a Tuukka Rask was a goalie in Providence.
Oh yeah.
And I think he allowed like two shootout goals, and he was just whacking the net with a stick. And at one point he's heading into the tunnel, and he chucks a milk crate from the tunnel. Like, that is insane that he would do such a thing.
Okay, but that's Tuukka being mad at himself. Like, I don't recall too many times he was taking that out on opponents.
That is true.
But yeah, like young Tuukka Rask could be quite hot-headed. But he held himself to a high standard. He ended up having a great career. I mean, that's, you don't want him doing what he did in Providence. It's a pretty famous clip or infamous clip, but that's at least someone demanding more of themselves rather than going out there looking to I don't know if we can say Binnington's trying to injure opponents, but definitely looking to get under their skin and, you know, the problem is you can't really touch a goalie in the you can't hit a goalie legally, right? So there's not a lot of recourse for these players that, isn't going to involve them getting a penalty that hurts their team.
Yeah.
Whereas you can hit a defenseman legally, right? If he has the puck and you have a beef, you can settle it in a way that's within the rules of the game that doesn't, you know, hurt your team.
You could do like what Darcy Kuemper did over the weekend and slash Tyler Toffoli in the back, or at least in the back of his legs, I think. But that's after he took an elbow to the head. I'm not sure if he's going to be out longer, but he was in concussion protocol after that. But goalies find their ways to exact revenge is what I'm trying to say.
Maybe the best revenge is putting 5 goals behind Binnington.
But yeah, that's probably
it. It's less fun. Less fun for the memes and stuff, but probably better. You know, that's what the game's about. Making him lose is going to frustrate him even more.
Shout out CJ. I feel like this petty side just coming out of you with that one. You got a petty side to you, sir.
I mean, I've been watching Frontier Justice in NHL games for a long time, man.
Frontier Justice.
I've had time to think about this in various circumstances.
Oh man, this just sounds evil. All right. So there's two other stories I want to get to before I ask CJ. Since we talked about goalies, I'll bring up Jacob Markstrom here, and I'll ask my questions about Alex Forbenton after that, just because we've been talking about goalies. Did you catch Jacob Markstrom, Calgary Flames goaltender, telling the media that he sucks not once but twice?
I did see that. I like it. Yes, because it's a moment of honesty, right? And that's him taking ownership. And so you could look at it like you don't want an athlete to give away that part of himself. Like, you never want to show someone that you're struggling or that you're dealing with maybe some uncertainty in your game or your play. But I mean, in the context of a team sport, that's him taking responsibility for some of what's happened in Calgary. And, you know, it's deflecting away from his teammates any criticism or questioning they might get. And I'm guessing at this stage of his career, I mean, Jacob Markstrom's had a long career. He's had a lot of success in the NHL. He's confident he's going to get out of it. And so I see that as I'm sure you were there, so you can probably read into the feeling. Like, maybe it was just an emotional thing. It wasn't something he thought through ahead of time, and he just was being blatantly honest. But I actually think it can be a good thing for him because, you know, now he's got to go not suck. And you know, he's taking ownership. Like, that's such a big thing in hockey. It's like the thing if you haven't, and I'm not like being like, well, you didn't play the game, but like if you haven't played or like really thought about it, like the team aspect of the sport is so important. And when a team is struggling, it's easy for like a lot of individuals might get blamed for mistakes in the game or not producing enough offense or, you know, various things. The coach gets questioned about his lineup decisions or his, you know, his pairings, all this stuff. But, you know, I think when you have someone take ownership like that, that's a leadership move. So I actually like it. You tell me, do you think it was thought out ahead of time, or was that him just frustrated in the heat after a loss?
I thought it was just him being frustrated. And I know there are some people who look at that game and they were like, you know, oh, he only allowed 2 goals. I don't know why people are making such a big deal. I mean, the offense sputtered too. They should get more of the blame. Jacob Markstrom straight up told us that he sucked. Like, I asked him, like, I don't know if you saw that game, but like 13 seconds in, Sean Monahan, it happened to be the game against Montreal Canadiens. Sean Monahan gets a break. And yes, the defense was a bit at fault, but he gets this break. And Jacob Markstrom is like sliding out of his net trying to stop that puck and fails to do so. And Juraj Slafkovský scores. That's like 13 seconds into a game where, you know, your team has had moments where, you know, they're starting on the back nine. Like, you know, you can't do that. Or if you're going to do it, you have to make that stop. Like, it's a pretty weird move that he did. I still don't get why he would think of that strategy. But like, between that and he kind of started a little mini thing with Josh Anderson that led to a penalty, that led to the power play goal scored. And then he told us that he sucked. Like, I don't know what you want us to do. Like, people were going to be like, well, we shouldn't make a big deal about Jacob Markstrom. He told us that he sucked. Like, I think that's a bit, and maybe it's because, and I don't know, I kind of took it as like a little bit of a weird, that's a weird thing to say. I think I understand the honesty, But when you know that the last few games he's played have not necessarily seen him at his absolute best, and then he's just straight up like, I just suck right now. I just suck at hockey right now. As honest as that is, I don't know if I was in charge of a team, if I want my goalie being like, man, I suck right now. Like, there's some honesty, but also like, you want to make sure that it's not completely affecting your confidence.
Right. But there's a chance now for everyone to rally around him and pick him up and play better defensively and give him a chance.
Sure.
Not to suck. Like I see it as an opportunity. Like you're getting, I get it. He's getting to like a some sort of breaking point in his mind, like where he's really frustrated, obviously, to make that comment. And he probably felt like he sucked. Like that's just the truth. I doubt he said absolutely. That not thinking that he hasn't sucked. So, I mean, I have no problem with it. Again, if this was like a rookie or something, I would view it differently. I actually see an older player who makes a decent salary. He's an important part of the team. I see him taking some ownership here and giving everyone a chance to rally around him, and we'll see how he goes. If anyone tried to criticize you guys for making a deal out of that, like, come
so
on.
So it's not like a big like criticism thing. And I'm only really going off the story I wrote for The Athletic on it, where I think that the way that went down and considering what has gone on over the last few games, like, I feel like the Flames are in a position where they kind of have to save his confidence. Like, I didn't want to go out there and be like, Jacob Markstrom sucks and he's been a crappy goalie, and just dump on him. I don't think that's necessarily a fair thing. We don't necessarily know what goes on in a person's life, but also, like, I don't know. Like, I felt like you have to be critical in that moment in some way. And I think the Flames in that moment, like, that felt like, to me, as someone who's watching all these games, like, that's a moment where it's like, okay, if you're the team, you have to figure out a way to lift his confidence. And to your point, like, yeah, like, if you're a player on that team and you hear that, you're thinking, all right, man, like, next game we play for Jacob Markstrom, let's lift up his spirits. Let's do everything we can to get some goals in. Elias Lindholm, not long after that, like, we were asking him questions about that. And he's like, I didn't think he sucked. Like, I think we need to be better offensively. So definitely the players recognize that fact, right? Like, it's just, I think it's like for something like that, for me, I was just like, nah, like, you have to, I don't know, that's a bit weird for me. And he doesn't have to lie to people. There are other ways to say that, like, you know, you didn't play well and all that. But when you go out saying that you suck, and you say that you suck twice, I just suck at hockey. Like, the second time he said that he sucked at hockey, we asked him what happened on this exchange with Josh Anderson, where he clips him and then Josh Anderson rolls around and then goes in front of him and acts like a tough guy and thinks he's going to cross check him. And then, like, he's up in Jacob Markstrom's grill, which then leads to Andrew Mangiapane, like, mauling him. And then he takes that penalty, which eventually leads to the go-ahead goal. That we asked, like, what happened on that exchange? And he was just like, nothing really. I just suck at hockey right now. And maybe that's deflecting, but also, like, that's an interesting way to deflect.
I like it. I mean, we can agree to disagree on this one. I think it's...
That's fine.
I'm willing to bet, honestly, I'm willing to bet that he plays better after that. Like, I think it's just a low moment for an athlete who thinks, you know, like, he has a high expectation for himself. Like, when you get to the point where you're saying that, you're obviously frustrated. A lot of stuff has built up. It hasn't gone the way anyone wants it to go for the first quarter of the season in Calgary. I think that's pretty clear. And he's got to be part of the solution. I mean, he kind of sucked in the second round against Edmonton last year too, right? So, you know, and at least Dan Vladar is there. Like, they have another player that can play games. Like, it doesn't all have to be on Markstrom's shoulders, but I don't mind it. Again, he's a veteran. If it was a rookie, I'd view it totally different, but he understands, he knows what's going on, and he can, I think he has the ability to make everybody know he doesn't suck in these future games.
That is true. Also, I like these discussions where we could just, like, we don't necessarily agree. Like, I like, we're not doing it maliciously. Like, this is a really interesting discussion and a good perspective.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't look. You're close to the team. I'm viewing it from afar. So there's that element of it as well. But we need more honesty, man. Like, that's, if you're there, if we're gonna go to the games and ask questions and watch, I mean, it's nice if people just tell us what they think. And that's clearly what Jacob Markstrom thinks of himself, at least as of, you know, last week.
How would you feel if after a show recording, like, we get to the end and it's like, hey guys, thank you all so much for listening to this edition of the CJ Show. Man, I gotta say, man, I sucked today.
Well, there's probably some days over 100 plus shows that I have sucked. So
there's some days I know, like, I can point to a few days in the last little while where I can straight up just say, like, man, I sucked.
This is what I mean. Like, why would we pretend otherwise? Like, everybody, if you like not everybody's great every day. I mean, you want your intentions to be good, you want your process to be good, but sometimes the outcomes aren't great. I've written a lot of stories I never want to read again, put it that way.
Been there.
Just because, like, if you know, you write as much or as often as I've written over a long period of time, it just some days you don't have clarity of thought or you're rushed or whatever it is. It's just, you know, everyone's got to grind through their life. Jacob Markstrom is in it right now. He's got to grind through and find a way to get back to being the guy that was, you know, worth the money and the contract and the free agent pursuit that he had a couple seasons ago.
All right, CJ, next time we do a show and I know for sure I suck, I will just straight up say at the end, man, I suck.
Or maybe one week I'll just give you my cross check on a Thursday and be like, you suck.
Yeah, this is for Julia, man. He sucked. Oh, man. Okay, so we've gone through all the goalie stuff. There is just a bit of maybe not a serious, but just very interesting note that I do want to get to before we get to Ask CJ. Alex Formanton of the Ottawa Senators, the deadline for him to sign a contract so he could be eligible to play at all this year has long passed. The Ottawa Senators, those two sides have not come together on any type of agreement. But what do you see there in that situation?
Well, I understand why everyone's making links. You know, I think that the links are fair. Alex Formanton played on the 2018 Canadian World Junior team. The 2018 Canadian World Junior team is alleged to have, at least some members of that team are alleged to have been part of a sort of sexual assault in London, Ontario after Hockey Canada banquet. You have the unusual case of a restricted free agent getting past the December 1st deadline without a contract. You know, there's a lot of links being made there, and I can understand why the public wants to do that. All I can tell you is I can't make that link directly. No one directly involved with it has confirmed or said that. It's an unusual situation, but all I'll say is everyone's underground. I mean, there's no explanation being offered publicly or privately for why this situation got to this point. I suspect over time there's going to be more discussion about it and we might get more clarity into how we got to this stage. But you know, what you have here is a player who's 23 years old, scored 18 goals in the league last year, and now is ineligible to play in the NHL for the rest of the season. So, you know, I would suspect Alex Formanton will look for work in Europe, play the year there, and then we'll see how things go. You know, we do know the Senators did have some trade talks with teams before the deadline that passed December 1st to maybe try to deal his rights somewhere, and maybe those teams would sign him. I would suspect that's probably where this is headed. You know, it'd be hard for me to imagine a scenario where Alex Formanton plays for the Senators again after having to sit out a whole year of NHL hockey. But, you know, the truth is I don't know exactly what went on. And if no one's telling you, it's kind of irresponsible of someone in my spot to make giant public guesses, because obviously this is a highly serious topic when it comes to what's going on with that World Junior team. And, you know, I know to a certain degree, a lot of players have been implicated in it just by who has apologized and who hasn't, or who has said they weren't part of it. But, you know, I think we're pretty close to some clarity coming there. It sounds like the league is mostly wrapped up its investigation. We'll see where the London police land on the investigation that they reopened on the situation. But I do think that we'll get some degree of clarity that maybe will make not just whatever happened with Alex Formanton, but, you know, I think it will be positive for everyone, because almost everyone is guilty by association until there's more clarity on what happened there.
Yep. And just as we've tried to do throughout our time with that story, we are going to do everything we can to discuss it in full detail when all of those details are out. But I'm glad that we were able to kind of just mention that note with Alex Formanton and some of the other stuff we were able to discuss ahead of a segment that we normally do on a Monday, Ask CJ. We take in questions from viewers like you. And listeners, because we know there are people who consume the podcast in different ways. We go through some of those questions and we see how CJ answers them. CJ, are you ready for another edition of Ask CJ?
Born ready.
We still don't have a jingle for this segment. We probably never will, but I guess that's okay. Let's take this question from Amelia Pond. I recently learned that if you throw your hat onto the ice in Columbus, there is a grace period where they will give you your hat back. Do other teams do this as well?
I have to confess, I saw that question and it's the first I've heard of that. I didn't even realize that was the policy in Columbus. And I don't know of any other team that does it. Fill my mentions if I'm missing one, but I'm pretty sure in general, after a hat trick goal or, you know, any number of 100 hats are thrown on the ice, that typically those are donated to sort of a charity or something like that. It's hard to reunite people with their hats, especially late at night. But, you know, good for the Blue Jackets for doing that. I guess they're encouraging their fans to celebrate the times someone gets a hat trick. But I've never heard of that before anywhere else.
Yeah, me neither. I always felt like I mean, now that I know they get Derek, I mean, I didn't know they would end up that the charity aspect to this. I did not know that was the case. I used to just assume like teams would just kind of keep the hats. But like the idea of me throwing my hat on the ice for a hat trick, like I like my hats too much. So I just would never do it.
I mean, there's historical precedent, though.
That's true.
Do you know where it comes from?
I forget the story. Tell it.
Back in the day, whenever a player would score 3 goals, there was a company that would offer them a free hat if you scored 3 goals. So they would be given a hat as a gift or whatever to commemorate the achievement. And then it's evolved into what it is today.
Okay. So like they just throw the hats because they knew they were getting a hat.
I mean, I'm not sure how it went from that gift. That's how it got called a hat trick. I mean, it's evolved over time, but there's still not that many hat tricks. I mean, we're seeing more goals, but like you'd That's have true. To, I'm just saying, I went to 3 games as a kid. There was no hat tricks in any of those games. Like you'd have to go to a lot of games to be there for a hat trick or just get lucky.
Yeah. Neither of the games I went to before I started covering hockey, were there any hat tricks in mind either. I'd have to go back on the box scores for my games. But anyway, this next one from Jonah. If the Dallas Stars win the Central Division and Jason Robertson finishes with over 55 goals, is that enough for him to win the Hart Trophy, or would Connor McDavid still be your pick?
This is a massive hypothetical. Massive. I mean, look, if I had to make a finalist right now, a top 3, Jason Robertson's in it. And so that tells you all you need to know. He's very much in the conversation, the consideration for a Hart Trophy. It's just, you know, so much can happen in the next number of games. I think if he wins, I mean, look, Auston Matthews won the Rocket Richard Award last year, didn't win the points title, but had over 100 points, but Connor McDavid had more points than him, and Auston Matthews still won the Hart Trophy. I think that's all you need to know, is that if the Stars have success, if Jason Robertson had, you know, continues on the kind of pace he's on, or you know, gets to some significant milestones and stays within a certain range of points, he's going to get consideration. But he's going up against a generational player too for that award, and so I'll just have to see where we land come April. I mean, I don't make my votes, fortunately, on December 5th or even March 5th. You know, we get to mid-April to see how the season plays out, but I think he's very much in that mix to at least challenge for the award, which in itself, you know, is a surprise to most around hockey, or many.
You're high up at the PWHA, right? You're still like PHWA. PHWA, sorry.
Yeah, I'm part of the executive. I'm a vice president.
As someone who just received their membership card for the very first time a couple of days ago, that means I get to vote, right, on the awards. I just want to double check that. That's cool, right? I'm good. I'm good.
I can't. I don't actually choose that, so I don't know.
I mean, what do you mean choose that?
Well, because it's done carefully. There's because we were always sensitive to this East Coast bias thing. So there's a certain number of voters in each city. So like certainly the writers in Montreal and Toronto, like places that's a big PHWA market, they don't all get to vote every year. Not because we don't think that they're capable voters, but we try to balance a representation from voters, you know, based around the various cities in the league. So there's a formula that's enacted that's taken very, very seriously. I'm not part of those choices, and I certainly wouldn't, no offense, I'm not going to pull any strings for you, but your work more than makes you capable as a voter, and I'm sure you'll get there, but I can't say for sure today.
CJ, you have pulled enough strings for me. I'm okay if you don't have to pull any for these.
Well, ones. But I also don't have to. Like, you're working daily on a beat. Again, we have more Eastern based writers. You're a Western based writer now, so I'd say your chances are good, but I can't tell you for sure you'll be voting.
Well, everyone listening and watching, just another edition of us going behind the curtain, seeing how the sausage gets made with the PHWA. Can you tell that I'm happy that I got my card the other day? Anyway, it's not about me. It's about Ask CJ. This next question from Chad Head. Big fan of the beard. What's your routine for trimming and styling?
It's pretty low maintenance. I use beard oil every day after having a shower just to keep the nice moisture, not get too dry under there. And then I leave the trimming and styling to my man Safe at Rendezvous Barbers in downtown Toronto. Would highly recommend if anyone's in the area and looking for, you know, fades or beard work or anything. They do a great job. And that's not an ad, just a longtime customer of Safe, and he's an awesome guy. Big soccer fan, doesn't know too much about hockey, but great fellow.
Let everybody know what the beard oil you use is.
I'm not loyal to one brand, so.
Oh, okay. All right.
I've actually tried North Standard, who makes the bear hats. I've used their beard oil. I've used a few others. So yeah, I like trying different ones.
If you own a beard oil company, hit us up. Maybe we could work out some kind of sponsorship. I don't know. We both happen to have facial hair. We both happen to use beard oil. I don't think it's out of the question to solicit beard oil sponsorship.
No, whatever.
Next question from, go ahead.
As you say, we're also a customer. Not only are we a customer, we're even a client or whatever that hair. Anyway, yes.
Anyway, yeah, exactly. Jack Richardson on Twitter. Alex DeBrinkett in Ottawa. General thoughts about how either side is feeling about an extension.
I don't have a good sense of that yet. Like, it probably hasn't gone quite as well as everyone would have hoped. But, you know, the Senators are an interesting team. Like, they haven't won enough games. But if you look at their goal differential, like, I don't know. Like, I could see them getting hot enough to climb back in the race a little bit. Like, there's still room for it to improve, I guess. So I don't know any specifics on extension talks. Probably not the best time right now with everything the team's going through. But we'll revisit that as we get deeper into the season.
Next one from Florida man Matt Maroon. Which trio would you rather have in your opening lineup for the playoffs? Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak, Stamkos, Point, Kucherov, or Tavares, Matthews, and Marner?
Man, well, that's tricky because those aren't all lines, right?
Well, yeah, I think Stamkos,
like the Bruins line,
that's not like Stamkos, Point, Kucherov's not technically a line,
right? And neither is the Leafs trio, whereas the Bruins guys at times have been a line and probably the best consistent line over the last 6, 7, 8 years in the NHL. Oh, I'll take the Bruins guys right now. They're pretty darn good, and the team's humming. But there's a no win question there. Like, there's no wrong answer. But I'll take the Bruins players. I think they do have something special as a line. Like, they've been called the perfection line by some. So
that is true. From Y Guy on Discord, who has better hands, Connor McDavid or Trevor Zegras?
Trevor Zegras, probably. I mean, I still think. That's not to like knock at McDavid, but it's pretty clear that his awareness and his speed are like his two real differentiating abilities or capabilities. I guess how you define hands. I mean, there's like some magic in what Zegras can do. I think the magic of McDavid is just that he plays the game like everybody else's three leagues below him, which is insane when you're talking about NHL players. So I think I'll give Zegras the edge, just like even the wizardry last year in the All-Star game. If you saw the skills competition, breakaway challenge, like it was crazy, the stuff he can do. So he's got outrageous hands. But I think McDavid has other gifts that have made him the best player in the world.
Zegras had a nice move in the shootout against the Minnesota Wild the other night, actually.
Yeah, I mean, he's sick. Like, it, if there was like a trick shot competition, I just feel like he could do stuff that no one else can do.
Two quick ones before we run out of here. M.W. Bauer, how long did you work at Wendy's? Was it in Coburg? And how often did you eat at that Wendy's when you worked there?
I think I worked there for 3 years. It was in Coburg. I was actually part of the first when they opened the restaurant. They actually had interviews at like the convention center, or I mean, it's not a convention center, but the hotel there. And like, I think like 400 people applied for like 40 jobs. And I was one of them that got the jobs. And I actually had to go to the Peterborough Wendy's to train because our store wasn't open yet. And then was part of opening that store. And so I loved working there. It was a great, it was hard to get jobs back then. It was hard to get like low paying jobs, like low skill jobs when I was 15. I was 15 years old when I got hired. And I worked basically until I moved to Toronto for university. I ate a lot of Wendy's at that time. Because I was young and I got 50% off and didn't have a lot of money, and it made sense. And it was a great, great experience, but I don't eat a lot of Wendy's these days. In fact, I can't remember. It's been years. I don't know when I've last had Wendy's. Not because I saw anything that bad or gross, but I just try to avoid fast food as much as I can.
Last one for you from Adil Pickle on Discord. Do JM and CJ use Spotify? And if so, what do their top five artist songs look like? So they're asking about our Spotify Wrapped. I don't know if you saw a bunch of those going around, obviously.
Yeah, I saw we were on some of people's. I do use Spotify. I'm giving the Christmas pop list a pretty good run these days. Because I like the Christmas time, and there's some good songs on there. I don't know what mine would have looked like. I don't have it handy right here, but you know, I listen to all kinds of, I'm pretty basic, man. A lot of Taylor Swift. I like a band called The National, which is a totally different kind of music, but I listen to a lot of The National. I like their old stuff, and their newer stuff was on there. I listen to Tragically Hip still every once in a while. I don't know if it made my top five, but I kind of go, I range around. Yeah. You're cooler and more relevant than me, or more normal than me.
I don't know about normal. Like, The National is a perfectly fine band. The Tragically Hip, perfectly fine as well. A lot of people consume Taylor Swift. This year, I got a lot of The Weeknd. The Weeknd dropped an album this year, Don FM, which I think is like my favorite Weeknd album like ever. Burna Boy, there's a song with Gunna and Drake as well that I liked. In terms of top five artists, I think it's The Week. I actually literally just pulled it up for myself. It's The Weeknd, Drake, Kendrick Lamar, Future, and a band I really like called Tame Impala. Yeah, that's my top five. There we go. All the
T-Swift for the win.
Yes, clearly I don't have T-Swift in my top five. You probably would consider your musical habits being
I really like the new album.
Oh, really? Is it good?
It's growing on me, yeah.
Okay.
Right. It was a weird one because like the first listen, I wasn't like, oh, this is amazing. But then it's like, you know what I mean? It just slowly like it just like absorbs into your pores. And anyway,
anti-hero. So CJ, you gotta give us some music reviews too on top of movie ones. We'll do one before the end of the year is out. We'll satisfy everybody who wants that. Yeah, that's gonna do it for episode 115 of the Chris Johnston Show. I didn't suck today. You didn't suck today either. I thought we were both really good.
Yeah, we were long. This is a long half an hour pod.
Yeah, this is very, very long. I think this might have even gone longer than an hour, actually. But hopefully it was worth it for everyone who listens. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And we'll be back on Thursday with a brand new episode. For CJ, I'm Julian saying so long. Enjoy this great week.
The Chris Johnston Show.
Powered by Sports Interaction, Canada's Sportsbook.
Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter at ReporterChris. And follow Jillian McKenzie at JK McKenzie.
The Chris Johnston Show.